good evening, and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Our topic this hour is an unusual exhibit at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts called Work in Progress, Investigations South of Market. YBCA selected eight local artists to delve into the layered history of San Francisco's South of Market neighborhood. Their works are being created on-site, demonstrating process as well as final product. With its unique blend of artists' residency as well as art exhibition, is Work in Progress a new model of patronage and exhibition? And in what ways are artists able to address issues of cultural change that others may not be able to? We are pleased to have in the studio tonight the CEO of Yerba Buena and two of the exhibition's artists as they discuss urban planning, environmental impact, and change in this historic neighborhood. They are Deborah Cullinan. She is CEO of YBCA. She is also co-founder of Arts Forum SF and a member of the board of California Arts Advocates, Californians for the Arts, Mission Hub, and the Community Arts Stabilization Trust. She is on the advisory board of the Catalyst Initiative, Gray Area Foundation for the Arts, HowlRound, the San Francisco Arts Education Project, and the Community Visions Project, Americans for the Arts. Whoa. I had to take a breath there. She is co-chair of the San Francisco Arts Alliance and is a Rockwood Fellow, a Gerbode?
Gerbode.
Gerbode, a Gerbode Fellow, and alumni of the National Arts Strategies Chief Executive Program. Welcome back to the program, Deborah.
Thank you for having me back.
And we're also joined here by two of the artists, as I mentioned. The first is Jenny Odell.
Yes.
Excellent. Who has an MFA in design from the San Francisco Art Institute and a BA in English Literature from the University of California, Berkeley. Her work has made its way into Time Magazine's Lightbox, The Atlantic, The Economist, Wired, the NPR Picture Show, PBS NewsHour, and various Gestalten books. Wow. You guys are trying to trick me tonight. She teaches internet art at Stanford University and is a contributor to many other publications. Welcome, Jenny.
Thanks for having me.
And we're finally joined by artist Tom Laughlin, who received an MFA from the San Francisco Art Institute, a JD from the University of California, Berkeley, and his BA from Dartmouth College. He has had many solo and group exhibitions around the Bay Area and as far away as Colorado. Wow, that's really far. Laughlin was a 2013 finalist for the Graduate Fellowship at the Headland Center for the Arts and a 2008 recipient of the Black Rock Arts Foundation grant. He was a 2014-15 affiliate artist at Headland Center for the Arts and a 2013-14 studio artist at Root Division San Francisco, and he lives and works here in the city. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
And as always, we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You could also email or text us now at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment at the KLW website. You can also reach us by tweeting us at cityvisionskalw. So I have to say I'm a little shy around people with so many degrees at this table. This is great. I'm curious to hear a lot about the work that you're all involved in. But first, I want to start with you, Deborah Cullinan. What gave rise to mounting this, not exhibit, this residency slash exhibit contemporaneous process?
I love the way you're phrasing this because it is not an exhibition and yet it is an exhibition. It's not a residency. It is a residency. I think there are a couple of really important reasons why we wanted to do this. And one of them is really about reimagining space. We were talking earlier about how people experience exhibition spaces or museums, what they feel like they can or cannot do, what they get to see and what they don't get to see. And we were particularly interested in saying, hey, what if it is a work in progress? And what if you walk into what is considered a museum or contemporary art space and you get to engage with artists and you get to engage with questions and you get to engage with work that is coming into being? So that's one part of it, is to think of what is the 21st century art center? What is the exhibition space? How do people want to engage? And how can we share what our artists are thinking about, not only in the form of product, but also in the form of process and relationships? Another reason we wanted to do this particularly is because we're in the South of Market, and we are in a rapidly changing city, and we think there is nothing like an artistic point of view. There are very few people who can illuminate for us what has been, what is, and what can be. And we wanted to have a collection of artists that would help us think not about a polarizing conversation about change, but really a deep and poetic discussion about what can happen in a neighborhood, what it is, and what it can be.
So tell me how you've actually created the experience to allow people to engage it at the level or levels that you'd like them to.
So we paired the artists. Two at a time, each working like they are working in a studio space, in order for them to be exploring together while the galleries are open to the public. And then we let the work sort of grow up, and hopefully we supported the work growing up around them in our exhibition space. We were just talking about it today. This show closes very soon.
Monday, in fact.
Yeah, Monday. Yeah. And right now, if you come to YBCA, you will see a gorgeous exhibition of work that was developed by these artists over the period of time. So it was really about taking it and allowing it to be studio space and then allowing for things to change as you come in and experience. And I can say that we did see quite a few people come back, which is really exciting, right? You see people often come to an exhibition once. If you're really lucky, they might come twice. But this, again, was about saying, can we have a relationship around these questions as opposed to a transaction that has to do with buying a ticket and walking in and out.
So literally the people who come to view the process are there interacting, watching the art being created as it's happening. There's no sort of tarp. Sort of cordoned off areas where it's like part in our
don't
dust.
Touch. No.
Right? It's like coming soon. It's here now.
That's right. There was no sorry, no pardon, no don't touch. And these artists can tell you what their experience was being put on view as part of it, and what they learned from people who have a certain expectation about how they get to interact in a gallery space.
So what you're describing to me is not just art as we think of it in an exhibit, right? It's art like we perhaps experience in other forms where there's just sort of no two experiences that are the same because the exhibit itself is changing day to day and from the beginning to the end. What was there at the beginning is not there at the end because there's new things. I mean, I think about other types of live performance, right? Dance or music or theater that although they often will stick to a certain script, technically it's never the same performance twice. So how big of a leap is it to do that in an art exhibition like this one?
I mean, I think that it is both a very big leap and unexpected, and then it's also just the next step in the way a contemporary art center needs to be thinking about itself. We have the fortunate place of being a place that does theater and dance and music, and so we can look at how interdisciplinarity is a part of our dialogue as an institution. We can think a lot about how I think there is no one experience of any art and that it doesn't exist without the people engaging with it in a certain kind of way. That's what exhibition spaces, museums, Kunsthalls, community art centers, that's what they're for. And so the extent to which we can be thinking about how we're creating dialogue between lots of different kind of people through art, you know, I think that is what the Art Center is here for. In a city like San Francisco, where we do see a lot of polarizing dialogue about how we're changing, and we are changing very rapidly, demographically and otherwise, the Art Center can be the unique place that really brings very different kinds of people together. And it's the artists and their questions and their explorations that allow us to do that.
So the art is changing. So it's not just that different people viewing the art have different experiences, but the art itself is changing in moment to moment. So I want to turn to the artists. How did you experience this process? Was it like anything you've done before? And what was it like to be perhaps both artist and performer, if you considered yourself that, as you were engaging with people as they were viewing the process? Let's start with you, Tom Laughlin.
I'll tell you what it's like. It's like that dream where you're in high school and you forgot to wear any clothes to school on the first day. So it's a very vulnerable thing to be making art in public. And in a way, more so than I expected, because one of the things that visitors want to know is, what is this piece? And you don't know yet. It's still becoming something, you know, while you're working on it. So it's hard to know what it is. It's hard to put language around. I mean, making art is an irrational act to begin with. So then to try to speak about it using logical, you know, phrasing is hard to do when it's still unformed.
So how did you get over your stage fright, as it were?
I like being naked at high school, personally. That's the way I'm wired.
And so had you done anything like this before?
Yeah, I mean, I've done some sort of performative work before that has me – I'm making myself, you know, a character. I did this actually at Bay Area Now. I don't think anybody got it but me, but I was asked to speak about some work that I'd done. And so I sort of became this character of a professional artist and gave a PowerPoint presentation, sort of TED Talk inflected. And I think nobody got it, but I had a great time doing it anyway.
Hmm. And so how did your work shift over the period? How many weeks were you?
I'm still building the piece. I'm showing it on Saturday. It's interesting how it's evolved. Mainly my understanding of what the piece is has changed in part through the interactions with visitors, as Deborah mentioned. You know, I thought that people would read the piece as being about privacy and surveillance and networks of technology. And I find that's not what actually strikes people about it. And I should mention that what I'm doing is I've set up six unlicensed radio stations around SoMa that are broadcasting out on the FM airwaves. In fact, they're now six of your competitors are my stations for this project. They broadcast just the ambient sound from their locations, which is a restaurant, a loading dock, an SRO hotel, public plaza, places like that. And then in the gallery, I receive those radio stations and record them onto big old reel-to-reel tape decks from the 70s. That have the erase heads disabled. So I started with clean tapes, but every day that I'm recording, I'm adding another layer of sound from another day another day of the life in SoMa. And so that the sounds have become sort of thicker and denser and less recognizable as you know, individual conversations and more a hubbub of activity, for example. And so I think that's what captures people's interests more than the specifics of any given conversation, because that's all getting lost in the accumulation of sound.
And how much interaction did you have with people who were watching or listening, actually, I should say?
Quite a lot. I've been in the gallery basically every hour that it's open and a bunch of hours that it's not open, because every day I'm recording, every day I need to know what I'm making, know what's coming in, knowing if I'm having technical problems with the radio stations or the equipment. There have been plenty of those. So I've been there a lot. And so when visitors come through, they are sort of pleased and surprised to discover that there's a real-life artist there that they can talk to. So I've had a lot of conversations, some very interesting conversations, some very unexpected conversations.
Anything that shaped kind of the project that in a way that you didn't anticipate?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's been more collaborative, and collaborations have included these interactions with visitors, more collaborative than I would have expected, which has been sort of a delight. I mean, usually as an artist, I'm working alone in my lonely garret up at the Headland Center for the Arts, and it was great actually to be working in front of people, see what they're noticing, and think about what that means for the piece, you know, what shape the piece is taking.
Is there an example of something conscious, or do you feel like it was a more kind of fluid, you're not quite sure how to...
See, this is what happens. People want you to talk about
your
creative process when you're
naked,
still doing
right
it
in front of all of us here.
I love it. I love it. It's hard to say. It really, when I'm doing my art, when I'm making it well, when I'm doing the best I can, it's coming from such an intuitive place that it's hard for me to say, this is where that idea came from.
Mm-hmm. So I want to turn next to our other guest artist here. So tell us what it was like for you, Jenny, to be in this space again, watching people respond to your art. What was it like for you, and how does this compare perhaps to other places where you've been exhibiting or working?
Yeah, I definitely hadn't done anything like this before. But for the project that I was doing, it was really well suited because I feel like I kind of just turned into a net for the time of my residency, and I was just collecting information from like anyone who would talk to me about anything having to do with SOMA, like at all. So for me, like that was a really important part of like the material that I was working with, was the conversations that I was having with people. I don't know if my project would have been possible under other circumstances, or maybe it would have, but it would just have taken a lot longer. I was externalizing my research on these giant bulletin boards, basically in the space, so people could see what I was working on, what I was looking at, and then I had a giant screen behind me that was hooked up to my computer, so you could also see what I was researching, like at the moment. And the table that I was sitting at had a bunch of books on it having to do with the history of SOMA, which was kind of a way of maybe like luring people over to me, to talk to me. But those books were there for visitors to peruse like at length. And then there were also a series of notebooks, one per location I was looking at, that people were encouraged to write in. So even if I wasn't there, actually, people wrote in them more when I wasn't there because I think they were intimidated. But I would come back every day and there'd be, you know, some new story about someone's experience of like the mall or the parking garage, or just like Yerba Buena. Yeah. I guess the only precedent I really had for this was in 2014, I had an exhibition at Intersection for the Arts, which was about infrastructure, because that's one of the things I'm interested in as an artist. And that most of that show was pretty standard, like me making prints, exhibiting them. I made those prints alone. But part of the programming for that show was a tour of a wastewater treatment plant, and taking people on that tour, like something sort of clicked for me. Like, this is more meaningful than stuff I've been doing before. There's something about this kind of way of interacting with people that I think I probably took with me, mm-hmm. which is why I ended up doing a walking tour for this residency.
Hmm. So Deborah, as I'm listening to the two artists here, Tom and Jenny, describe their experiences, what I'm hearing is that there was this definite co-location of visitor and artist, and perhaps even sort of a dialogue, but it's not tangible, at least in a way that can be described. How does this meet or not what you were hoping for this experience to be like? What were you hoping to see happen here as you put the creative process so made it so accessible mm-hmm. to the public?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it met and has so far met. We'll see what Tom comes up with this weekend. Exceeded really what I was after. So look, this is experimenting, and I think part of my hope for YVCA is that we can be a place that embraces experimentalism and that just gives things a try. You know, I think when we're trying to evolve the way art and artists are woven into the fabric of our city and the way we're running our institutions and how they're getting funded, all this business, that we have to really be open to giving things a whirl, like really. So for me, again, the two bits that were going to be successful were one, do we create a different relationship between the participant, the viewer, the audience member, and the art and the artist as things are evolving? And then two, can we prompt different ways of thinking about our city? Because we're asking artists who are deep thinkers, who are incredible at what they do, to come in and share their very different perspectives and their very different questions with us. So, you know, we have stadium projects that's looking at the way that cities change in relationships to sports iconography and this notion of nostalgia and the idea that maybe we can just be less nostalgic and less precious with the things that we're building. You know, we had Terry Berlier early on. She was one of the first resident artists looking at the 1906 earthquake. And, you know, I could name everybody, but the idea that we're saying we've got to have a more complicated conversation about how incredibly important art is to any healthy, vibrant city. how incredibly important it is to have nuanced conversations about how cities change, that we have to understand what has been and have the ability, the aptitude to think about what can be. We were just talking earlier. I always have to give a plug for my 13-year-old son, who is really all my resume thingy should say. You know, he's growing up in San Francisco, and I want him to be reminded to look up, and I want him to be reminded to stop and to ask questions. And it would be a beautiful thing if, after experiencing Tom's project and Jenny's projects, both do such a beautiful job of reminding us that there's a lot more to an experience in the street than we may actually be tuned into because of the way ways we're constructing our lives now. So to me, it's important that YBCA be known as a place for experimentation, that it be known as a place that supports a local cultural ecology. I want to be at the forefront of ensuring that artists are here for the long haul, that our city is an artistic, diverse place to be. But I also care as much about what this work can do out in the world. And, you know, I think if, especially just looking at these two artists here, this stuff is pretty beautiful. Like, to be able to stop and look at a place and imagine all the different things that it has been, and then have Jenny give you a little bit of a, you know, a look into the future to imagine what it can be. You know, I always often, or not always, but often think that there are very few people who are walking through their lives who have the luxury of being able to think about the past, the present, and the future all at once. And there are some that are so not able to think about much more than the present that the future won't be theirs. And so in my mind, this kind of work is so important. And I don't think you experience it the same way if you only get to see it when it's finished.
In case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight our guests include Deborah Cullinan, CEO of YBCA, the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, and artists Tom Laughlin and Jenny O'Dell, who are two of eight artists who are currently in exhibiting or working, displaying their process at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in a event entitled Work in Progress, Investigations South of Market. We open our phone lines to you, our guests, listeners, to discuss this topic and the topic of art in this city and what art means in day-to-day life. With our guests here in the studio. The number to dial to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment at the KLW website, or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. So you listed there three areas. You want to change the visitor experience. You want to engage a richer, a deeper dialogue about the city and how it is constantly shifting. And you want to create a path that will help sustain artists. So we're going to, I think, go in all of those directions, hopefully, in the next half hour of the program. So we haven't talked about South of Market all that much. So let's start with that. That's the one of the characters in this play, right? So it's obvious, you know, YBCA is in South of Market, so it's obvious. But were there other reasons why you picked South of Market to be the neighborhood of focus here?
I mean, I think we've alluded to them. Certainly, it has to do with YBCA being founded in South of Market, a project of the former redevelopment agency of the state of California, at a time when we are undergoing what many call unprecedented change. And, you know, there's a game that people play where they count the cranes. So I think it's both about being squarely grounded in our neighborhood, which is not just the neighborhood we can see today. And there's an enormous amount of history and not all good that went into building Yerba Buena Gardens. And now Yerba Buena Gardens is considered one of the most successful little neighborhoods in the city and a model project for redevelopment agencies of all kinds. And so how do you take responsibility for that? And, you know, born out of urban renewal, decades of struggle, an art center arrives and is a gift to its community, and it has a mandate to be the people's center and also to be a gateway to the world. And it's a heavy mandate, right, to think about how you support a diverse local arts ecosystem, how you nurture creativity and culture in your community, while you also play a role of bringing international voice and international concern into our community.
Is this exhibit about or process about making peace or bringing sort of closing the loop on an either an unfinished conversation or a never had conversation about the redevelopment of South of Market?
No. And I'll say no, because that's a kind of conversation that I don't think ever can be finished, because development and these are just words. There's an always evolving thing going on that has to do with change and equitable change or inequitable change. And, you know, I think YBCA and our sister institutions around us, all of which are part of the Yerba Buena Gardens, or many of them are part of the Yerba Buena Gardens project, are engaged constantly in a community dialogue about our purpose and about what that purpose means and how it evolves in terms of responsibility in relationship to the things that are happening around us. I think that the Art Center has an ongoing mandate to explore its neighborhood and to understand it. So, you know, that I think this is just one example of how we're doing that, and I could list off many others.
Mm-hmm. So, to Tom Laughlin, when you heard about this opportunity and you saw that the focus was going to be South of Market, what came to mind as the first of perhaps many ideas of how you might want to participate in this project? And what have you discovered about the neighborhood in going forward?
What came to mind first was what are the boundaries of SoMa exactly? And as an artist, one of the things that always interests me is when we have a – for example, with language, we have a term like love or democracy that we all have an idea of what that means, but we might all have a different idea of what that means. But we use these words like they have exactly one charge. So when I went to look up with the boundaries of SoMa and found that people don't agree on where they are, I thought this is – perfect. This is perfect. And what my project, I think, has how it's met the mandate, you know, of look at SoMa, is I'm sort of I'm trying to ask questions about when does a collection of moments turn into a neighborhood or turn into a history or turn into a culture? I mean, every moment that I capture, every silence, every gesture, every conversation, every siren, you know, it's just a fleeting moment, but at some point, the weight of those becomes something of significance that we all then have feelings about. You know, where's the dividing line there? And it's not clear to me where that is.
And so, is your work squarely rooted then just in the present moment, or are you able to kind of put feelers out towards past and future in the work that you're doing?
I'm trying to point both directions as much as I can. Given that I have 30 days, you know, to make this piece. I'm using the technology. I'm, you know, FM technology goes back a few years. I'm using audio equipment from the 70s. I wanted to visually feel like it was not clear what time period we're situated in. And then, you know, mashing 30 days onto six different audio tapes, I feel like is a gesture towards both the – oh, my gosh, all of the – destruction and rebuilding, and so much of SoMa is built on what was there before. You know, I think all of that and the accretion of time and things over time. So I'm trying to, in the 30 days that I have, point both at now as well as the past and future.
Mm-hmm. And so were the locations where you are setting up your equipment, are they complicit in this process? Are they aware that they're being recorded?
Yeah, they are. I got permission from every location, so they're all playing along. Not every person, I think, who's a participant by speaking in public is aware that they're participating, but every location was happy to host a microphone and transmitter.
And how did you pick the locations?
It was sort of a combination of, you know, again, letting the irrational have a voice here, finding who would say yes to this. I mean, you know, I had things that I wanted to do that I couldn't quite, and to me that was just fine. I probably talked to 50 different locations to get a dozen to say they wanted to participate, and then chose six from that list of 12 or so. But there was a lot more of people not – of just – I mean, I can totally understand. I wouldn't have said yes to me, I don't think. There's sort of no upside except that you think that doing something irrational is cool. You know, that's what I do for a living. I'm happy to know that there are people in San Francisco that still do it as a hobby.
Mm-hmm. And Jenny, tell us about your about internet art. That's your stamp,
yeah.
Right? Tell us about that and how that fits with this project.
Yeah. So, internet art is kind of the genre that I work in, but lately that's kind of just turned into research, like research online. Before I came to this residency, I was an artist in residence at Recology, which is pretty close to here, otherwise known as the dump, but pretty much it's a resource recovery facility. And I was researching objects on like every platform available online. So like corporate PDFs, Yelp reviews, YouTube videos, like Amazon product reviews. And so I had developed this form of research that was very internet heavy. And then I was sort of bringing that to bear as one of several sources of information when I was at YBCA. So it was a combination of my research, but then also importantly, conversations with people, and then also more traditional research at places like the Prelinger Library, which is local to SoMa, and contains a lot of ephemera that's not, you're not going to find online, and it would take you a long time to find a person who would remember that.
Is that library open to the public?
Yes, it is. It's open on Wednesdays only, which is kind of a drag, but it's two people running it. So it's a labor of love, but I can't recommend anything more highly than that. And for my purposes, I got very lucky. So shortly before I started the project, a guy named Norm Thurkelson, who was just an enthusiast of basically collecting news articles for 50 years, cut out newspaper articles from various different newspapers about development, and collected them into these giant scrapbooks that are actually so huge and fragile right now they haven't been scanned yet. So you have to go to the library to look at them. And there's one just for SoMa, and I had to go back twice or maybe three times just to go through them. And it goes all, it's surreal. It starts, you know, in the 50s, and then you're like, oh, this is now. Like, or like I went through and I was like, oh, this is the year where I moved here. That like coincides with my history. So I made use of that, and then cross-referencing all of those things. So cross-referencing people's stories with things that are in these articles, with things that are online. With Street View, which actually now goes back to like 2004 or 5, which is now a while ago. So maybe businesses that don't exist now, someone tells you about it, you can go on Street View, find it for yourself. Like see an image of it. So that's kind of like the way that my research aesthetic like entered the project. And I had a list of places that I thought that I was going to stick to, but the more I talked to people, I realized that I needed to have more, even though that was like harder work. The list definitely changed because I wanted to make it really clear that, you know, like I moved here in 2008. So I don't have the same claim to the history in SoMa that people who have lived there for a really long time do. That's why I said earlier, I just kind of turned into this like amorphous collecting force or something. And so I kind of took my cue from talking to people. But then I would, once I had a location, I would then kind of research it really in depth in the way that I do as an artist.
So what is your product? What would you how would you describe your product?
In this case, I mean, I'm an interdisciplinary artist, so I often make things like books or websites. In this case, it was a walking tour that also exists as something you can download on your phone. So you could still take this tour by yourself. It's like self-guided. But I led the walking tour in person last month, and it was fairly well attended, which was a pleasant surprise. It's about 2 hours long if you attend to each site as much as I would like you to. In the tour, the actual thing on your phone, it has photos of things being built or what was there before or what's going to go there in the case of the Mexican Museum, which is going to be built incorporating a very old building in SoMa. So it was just kind of this – the tour is an attempt to – show these kind of crazy juxtapositions, like you have affordable housing right next to where Twitter used to be, right next to where the subway is being built, like all of these things kind of mixed together, and then temporally too, like these islands of the past that have survived into the future, and then things are still being built.
This is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. Our guests tonight are Deborah Cullinan, the CEO of Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, and artists in a current exhibit there entitled Work in Progress. It closes on Monday the 15th. Investigations South of Market. And here we are listening to their descriptions of their work and the concept behind this artist in residency, meet the artist, and exhibition around and about the South of Market neighborhood. We invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation at 415-841-4134. You can email or text us at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment at the KLW website. So, Deborah Cullinan, did you conceive of a dialogue amongst the artists, the eight artists, and how did that take shape?
So I will, this is where I come in and give credit where credit is due. I have very small idea and not much to do with how beautifully this all turned out. I want to acknowledge our curator, Susie Cantor, who really took the lead in putting together the exhibition and taking it, or the program, the residency, whatever we want to call it, and taking it to the finish line. And I think, yeah, we did envision in various ways conversations between the artists. This is the thing about a place that is in process over time. And if you could see it, you know, growing in height and in texture, in sound, as each of these artists comes in and puts their fingerprints on it. So that it is a conversation, even if they aren't there. And I think that's when we know that we've done something successful. It was a conversation when they were in residence in studio, and it continues to be a conversation when they're not there. I was just saying the only thing that I think I would want to do differently is that once we get to this point and once Tom is sort of finished, wouldn't it be lovely to leave it as an exhibition for a period of time to understand how it does do that, how it talks to itself, and how it encourages dialogue with people that are visiting. But we also, you know, because YBCA is multidisciplinary, we have things going on all the time. We did an artist talk a couple of weeks ago, and we have an event that we do called Converge, and we looked for opportunities for artists from this project to be part of that as well. So, you know, public program, we have an event this weekend, you know, putting the public program together and inviting people to come in a more interactive way is also a big part of it.
Because technically the last day of the exhibit is like that piece or that collection of things will never have been seen before, right? Because that's
all together. I mean, that's
the only day
that
you can see it.
Yeah, it's so exciting. It's like this accumulation of a thing that has been so lovingly cared for by this group of people. And, you know, our staff, I have to tell you, if they could have their way, we would do this all the time. Because imagine what it's like to come to work and every day you can engage this way, which is very different from how you might engage, even if you're working, you know, in the galleries, with how you might engage with an exhibition as it's coming into being. So it got really exciting for the staff. People would swap stories. You saw it on Instagram, things like that, where it becomes a place of inspiration and it's much more, again, about a relationship between an organization and a group of artists, which I think is so incredibly important. I mean, you know, I've been in this business for a while, in this city for most of my grown-up life, and I think that our institutions can do a much better job of having relationships with artists, which is different than discrete projects or moments in time when you're working together, but really thinking about how we are all in this thing together and we are part of a cultural ecosystem that has to take some responsibility for itself and has to insist on a better future for itself.
So the center itself not only being accountable, so to speak, to the city or the neighborhood it's in, but to the visitors that come to it, and to the artists who are brought in, this ongoing cultivation of a relationship. So you said your staff would love to do this more. Are you planning on doing things like this more? And if not, why not?
So I can tell you that, yes, we are planning to do lots more wild things or things that could be considered unexpected. You know, our organization is made up of a series of curators who work across the disciplines. So we do film and video. We have the visual arts program. We are also known for performing arts, and we do a lot of civic and community engagement work. And so part of what I want to do is think beyond the particular disciplines and toward a practice for an organization that really is about experimentation. And our mission statement, actually, which is relatively new or refined, is to generate culture that moves people. And what we're trying to say is that we have a responsibility to be about cultural movement, and that our work with artists in any of those disciplines and beyond is about building community and about instigating cultural change and increasing participation. As the world changes around us, we want to see more and different kinds of people actively instigating culture that can change the world. And I think art centers of all kinds have a unique space to be able to do that. And when you think about it, you know, maybe it's, you know, up there kind of thinking, but the great and the worst changes in the world are the result of cultural movement and shifts. And you could argue that too few people are able to actually encourage and cultivate that cultural movement. And I think an art center like YBCA is so uniquely positioned to be able to say, hey, this is ours. This is ours to be a place where we bring people together to have conversation, to ask difficult questions, and to push the paradigm.
And so, Jenny, how do you take this experience with you after this is all over to inform the kinds of collaborations, the kinds of projects that you want to be involved in?
I think in just like a general sense, it's just confirmed maybe like a feeling that I'd had coming into it, which was that I had wanted to make work that built in more space for other people. There's something boring about making work by yourself, for yourself, like isolated, that maybe gets like appreciated at some point on a wall. I don't know. It just feels very dead to me. Like it was such a magical experience to have all these people come to this tour, people who have real actual emotional connections to these places. Like that's real. That's a lot realer than, I don't know, a lot of things I think I've made in the past. So I think looking forward, I just have a much deeper appreciation for the amount of history that's embedded just in people. I mean, if you think about it, it's crazy. I didn't have a hard time. Like, even when I would think I was leaving YBCA, like, oh, I'm done for the day. Like, my cab driver would start telling me about Yerba Buena, and then I'd go to, like, a party, and everyone there is telling me about, like, all you have to do is just ask, like, what do you remember? Like, and then, you know, it's all you need is a phrase. Like, everyone started telling me, like, oh, you have to look up the 1984 Democratic National Convention, or like, oh, you have to look up survival research labs at SF MoMA. Like these things, just like phrases, and that's all. I just need this like strand that I can then follow because that's what I do. But there's no way that would have been possible alone. So I think I'm really interested.
So it's
in,
like, crowdsourcing your art.
Yeah, yeah, and I actually am planning to do. I'm doing a residency at the Palo Alto Art Center this summer that pretty heavily involves visitors. It relies on visitors. So I'm really excited about this way of working.
And Tom, similar question for you. How do you see this experience shaping the projects that you would like to be involved in the future? And how does this experience speak to you about a new type of relationship between artist and center of some sort, art center?
Yeah.
Patron, whatever, however you want to describe that relationship.
I have to. Well, let me start by saying to pick up on something Deborah said. We're having an event this Saturday where I'll be playing my finished piece, which is not yet finished. The title of the piece is Chorus, by the way. And at Stadium Projects, which is the group that's making a piece now, will also have an event. Theirs is starting at 5:30. So from noon to 5:30, you can hear Chorus, and from 5:30 until I'm not sure how late they'll go, Stadium Projects will be presenting some work as well. I have to say, I've always been interested in connecting with sort of a non-traditional art crowd. I feel like the encounters that happen in galleries and museums can feel very you kind of know what's going to happen. There's nothing rarely, you know, it just seems like the unexpected doesn't happen as often there as it does out on the street. So my last body of work was some neon signs that hung in storefronts at random places around the city to try to connect with folks that wouldn't go to a gallery to seek them out. One of the projects that I'm working on now is actually using some of the steel from the old east span of the Bay Bridge to make a public sculpture that will have a sound and light component to it as well. So I'm always trying to have my work be directed towards an audience that's hard to get into a museum. I feel like one of the great things about this show or residency or whatever we've settled on calling it is just that. It's drawn in folks. I mean, I'm sitting out there. You can see me on Mission at 3rd and Mission sitting in the window of YBCA with 6 reel-to-reel tape decks running, suspiciously listening through headphones. And that's drawn some people into the gallery to just find out what is this new FBI field office, you know. So it's been – for me, it's felt like an opportunity to marry those two parts of my work, the sort of public, my interest in – you know, connecting with folks that don't seek art out, and then to do that in what is what might ordinarily seem like a more traditional art space, the museum.
And then this relationship with the center as a crucible for your creativity, as opposed to just the place where you try to and hope and pray that they'll write to you and say, can you display your work with us? How is that changing your what you imagined your relationship to a museum and our art center to be like?
Well, I have to say it's been nice to have somebody feel like my unfinished work is worthy of examination. I think that – I don't know. I can't speak for the other artists in the show, but I felt – like a real – honestly, a real sense of validation. And some of it, frankly, is seeing these other – I mean, you know, there's – I feel like this is an impressive group of artists that I've been curated into. And to see – you know, usually when you're seeing somebody's art, you're kind of seeing the highlight reel, not the day-to-day of how it's actually made. And to get a little glimpse behind the scenes and see what other people's process looks like, I feel like has been fascinating. And also it's been sort of validating for me to feel like, okay, you know, sometimes when you put work up you're just hoping people don't know how the sausage was made, you know. But to see that everybody else, it's a little sloppy along the way, has been really fascinating for me.
So, Deborah, Tom just spoke there, and so did Jenny, about the fact that the public is a big part of the reason they do their work that enables their work, right? So let's talk about the visitor experience piece here. What has been the feedback you've received or heard about regarding what people have left this process with?
Yeah, this may be the problem with being the boss, but the feedback that I have received has been just overwhelmingly positive. Again, in the context of efforts that we're making as an organization in general to be more outward facing, to think of ourselves as a citizen institution, to make work in the streets as well, and to do much more work in community settings. Also, simple things like changing our lobby and putting furniture on our plaza that's playful. We decided pretty early on when I came to YBCA that we would just open the doors. Just open the lobby doors, not necessarily even open the galleries more hours or days a week, but just open the doors. And so all of these things are about saying this place can be for you, and this is about relationships. It is not about just wanting your body to, you know, to be able to count that you've come into our gallery space and taken in the work. And so, you know, I've heard from, as I say, staff loved it because it reminds them of why they do the hard work that they do every day. And you'd be surprised about how easy it can be to forget that in the context of keeping an organization going that's very complicated. Yeah. So just being able to engage with artists, and particularly for those who are preparators and those who work behind the scenes, which there are many in the arts in this city that work behind the scenes, and often people don't even know what they do. And they're the ones that are building the shows or making the sets and helping to make everything happen. So for them to feel the process come out into the space in a way that was valued differently by their own institution was also quite beautiful. Audience, I think, hands down, just what a delight.
And how about critics?
Critics. You know, I have not read anything other than this is a fantastic experiment. What a cool research project. What a great way of thinking. And as Tom pointed out, it's a pretty stellar collection of artists. And I think we've mentioned most of them. I'll add in the couple that I'm thinking we haven't mentioned yet, Val Britton and Weston Turia. And, you know, along with these guys, this is a pretty impressive list of artists that are well known. And so in some ways, it almost becomes riskier because of where these guys are in their careers and what people are expecting of them.
So as you near the end, all of you, to this experience, what is the statement as it currently stands? And we know it's shifting day to day here. What's the current statement on South of Market, and how does it reach out to engage the broader conversation? You mentioned early on you wanted to do something poetic, not polarizing. How does this reach out beyond the creative experience, beyond the experience of the visitor, to hook into the larger dialogue that we either are or are not having in this city? Jenny?
I think in my case, if I have an agenda, it's just to get people to slow down. I think like this, what struck me immediately about Soma when I moved to San Francisco was just the speed of development and the speed of change. And so I think that the way
the speed of traffic on all those one-way streets,
yeah,
as well.
Many things, yeah, yeah. But I think like the way my walking tour is constructed, it pulls out examples of things like these kind of like counter currents. For instance, one of my favorite parts of the tour is Lapu-Lapu Street, which is between 3rd and 4th and Folsom and Harrison. And there's basically like a small little area, all Filipino-named streets. And I should also mention I'm half Filipino, and this project, I had a lot of really interesting conversations with my mother and realized that I am totally out of touch with that side of my cultural heritage. So that was an interesting thing for me. But anyway, in the middle, there's this garden, this really beautiful garden that's open to elderly residents of affordable housing in the area. And that garden is actually the outgrowth. It was moved once, but I believe it was in the 70s, some elderly residents of another hotel or a residential hotel at the time, just started that themselves. Like they just, I don't think they asked for permission. They just, there was an empty lot and they started this garden, and eventually it was sort of recognized by the city and then it got its own like official plot. But, you know, like the experience of walking down, let's say 4th Street, there's like the Metreon, there's these like big shiny buildings, there's, you know, lots of construction, it's loud, and then you get to this quiet center of this block and there are plants growing and people caring for plants, and then there's a clinic where elderly...
There's a neighborhood.
Yeah, there's a neighborhood, and people and things are being cared for, and it's at like a human scale and a human rate. And so like I think if there's something I want people to come away with from my tour is like an appreciation for those miraculous moments that are left, and then maybe like a call to create more of them or preserve the ones that we have.
Tom?
Yeah, I like the, I mean, humanness. I think that's right. That's one thing that sort of emerged more strongly from my project than I anticipated going in. You know, we live in this digital world now. We live on this grid, and all data is stored on a grid, and you can go and any email that you've ever sent, we can now Boolean search the cloud where these things are kept and find out the thing that you wish you hadn't typed. You know, I am just trying to create an alternative, I guess, in a way, or maybe I have by accident, that's sort of this analog world where all of these discrete moments, instead of being located in identifiable places, are lumped into one big mass, and you can't tease out an individual moment. And so, you know, what the piece turns into is more of a collective, the sort of collective human experience of living in this neighborhood together and doing what we do every day without even necessarily thinking of it as being something that we're doing communally.
And Deborah?
You know, I think Tom asked the question earlier. I wrote it down so I can remember it, but when does a collection of stories become a neighborhood? And I thought that was sort of a beautiful way of thinking about what I think you will experience if you come by this weekend to see the final moments of this exhibition project. Weston Turia, his project takes on a really very controversial piece of development, just one part of his project. I'm totally simplifying it. But he's looking at the effects of development on sunlight and on wind. And these are very complicated things that have to do with pedestrian safety and shade and no net new shadow and all of these things. But at the end of the day, it also is just about looking up, thinking about the collection of stories that make a neighborhood, which are never going to be the ones that you can immediately see, and then believing that you have a piece of that story, you have something to contribute to it.
Hmm. And so I wonder if any of these pieces will show up in that museum, that library that you – is it big enough to hold any of these pieces?
I don't know. They are pretty crowded in there.
because you basically have created things that are part now of the catalog, so to speak, of South of Market. So to end our program, Deborah, how do you see this experience transforming the way an art center can actually nurture and sustain artists moving forward? What is different about this that's going to allow you to meet that goal?
This is a one project of many that is about YBCA's new framework for programming, which is really about thinking of process and relationships and thinking about how we as an institution can gather the great creative thinkers, the artists, the makers together around important questions and issues. And in what way, whether it's transforming a gallery space to become a place of process where any citizen is invited to engage, or it's about building a creative ecosystem and inviting creative citizens of all kinds to participate in the very same questions that we're asking the artists we're commissioning or the artists that we're supporting in residencies, the whole organization wants to open up its process. So a room, this is metaphoric, right? This is a room that we transform that way, but institutionally, we'll transform the whole practice, and that's what we're aiming to do.
Hmm. And how much of what you see yourself doing has anything to do with your neighbor across the street who's reopening after being closed for 2 years, SF MoMA? How much of this is trying to be different from that and trying to set a new path?
Well, I don't think we have to try at all. We just are incredibly deeply different, and that is what makes us great neighbors. YBCA is a contemporary arts, multidisciplinary art center. We do not collect. We're not a museum. We're a citizen institution. We're agendaed. You can almost say we're slightly activist. We're small. I'm obsessed with our rooftop because you can look down upon it from almost any corner of our neighborhood now. We're not casting new shadow or wind. We are about being as versatile, flexible, and collaborative as possible. I was just at a sneak preview of MoMA, and it is stunning. And we are so fortunate as a city that we have these different kinds of institutions. If we do it right, we'll work together, and the whole place will be better.
Side by side. Well, that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Deborah Cullinan, CEO of Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, and artists Tom Laughlin and Jenny O'Dell. And they are artists in an exhibit that ends this coming Monday, February 15th at YBCA, called Works in Progress, Investigations South of Market. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at klw.org. Our engineer this evening was Debbie Kennedy. Tonight's show was produced by Wendy Holcomb. I'll be away for a few weeks, and we'll be off next Monday for the President's Day holiday. Join guest host Eric Jansen on Monday, February 22nd. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night, and have a great week.